Hello there, my name's Neil David and I'm the host of Eurograps Express, the podcast exclusively dedicated to the wrestling of Europe. If it's wrestling and it happens in Europe and it's good, we talk about it. Whether it's RevPro, Progress, WXW, Passion Pro, Pro Wrestling Chaos, Pro Wrestling North, we don't care, we talk about them all. If it's good and it's exciting, I want to share it with you. We're on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Check us out on the feed. Check us out on Twitter at EurograpsEXP. And join us for chat about European wrestling and a little bit of chat about cheese. Hopefully see you there.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Here we go!
Listening to the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 31 of the Emerald Flow Show. We're a podcast on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. You can follow us on Twitter at Emerald Flow Show. And if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review. And we're also available on all other podcast apps. And if you're feeling generous, you can go to voicesofwrestling.com/donate to donate to our show. I'm Gerard Dutroyal here with Paul Vosch. Paul, we got a lot to talk about today, but how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing very fine because I guess it's got two firms, kind of, and it's going to Japan at the end of the year.
I don't know who.
I am. I actually booked my flights yesterday.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So what is your sort of dates that you're going to be there?
I am flying out of here on the 28th of December, so I'll be in Japan on the 29th. And then I'm staying until the 15th of January, but I'm technically flying out on the 16th. But I'm flying out at like 50 minutes past midnight out of Haneda on the 16th. So really, it's like from the 29th until the 15th.
Oh, wow. That's like you can see everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I basically have my plan is essentially that first week is essentially just going to be like nonstop wrestling shows, more or less. Like I'm planning to do like the All Japan, like year end one in Yoyogi on the 30th, the New Year's Tag Tournament, Noah the New Year, the two All Japan New Year shows, and then Wrestle Kingdom. And then I'll kind of figure out what I'll do from there.
It sort of ends after Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah, exactly. Like at that point, and then I can actually like go around the country and actually like maybe do like a little bit of other stuff. But like it's definitely that first week is basically going to be like I might as well just sleep in Kurgan, I guess.
You could, yeah, because you could. I wonder if it's possible to do like both Big Japan and Noah on the first at this in the same day.
Big Japan is in Kurgan, right?
Yeah, or is it 01 that's New Year's Day?
I think it's 01 that is in Kurgan, yeah. And then it's not that far from Kurgan to Budokan. So you can totally do that.
Yeah, see which Noah guy will be in the main event of the 01 Kurgan show next year.
Number, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's in Amura, and maybe he wins this time.
Maybe. I mean, I could see them giving the title to Inamura in 01 at least.
I mean, look, I'm surprised they haven't done that already. Like, it just, like, if you're not willing to give him a title in your own company right now, like, just let him stay in 01 and actually, like, work on top and everything, gain some confidence instead of just dropping him out constantly. Like, that just makes so much more sense.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got a ton to talk about, but I think for the sake of clarity, because these shows sort of bleed into each other, we're just going to go into chronological order. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start with All Japan at Korakuen Hall in front of 1,405 fans, which might be the largest Korakuen number this year of any company.
Maybe there's a, like, really the only other companies that could have beaten it would be New Japan and Dragon Gate. I don't know exactly what they've done in there so far this year, but I think it's definitely, like, even if it's not the biggest one, it's like second or third at worst, basically.
And it's the biggest All Japan Korakuen number since the pandemic.
Yeah, yeah. We probably need to go back to, like, I don't even know if they drew this at the beginning of 2020.
They might have. Shows there. I think they probably drew like 1,500 for like Jake Lee versus Kento.
Yeah. So, but like since then, it's basically the biggest Korakuen number.
Yeah. So we start off with the first match. Oh, before the show on social media, they made a big deal of it, but Unagi Sayaka showed up and bought some merchandise.
Yeah, I mean, they made a big deal of her. Like, I really liked how much they're making like her out to be like a really big deal. Like, she actually even got involved in the show like a little bit at least.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. And then, but she sat in the like the press section, mm-hmm. sort of thing. But there'll be more on that later. So to start off, we had Kotaro Suzuki, Rising Hayato, and Ryo Inoue defeating Hikaru Sato, Dan Tamara, and Oji Shiba in 5 minutes and 36 seconds when Hayato pinned Shiba after the Sid Vicious. I mean, this was really good. It's just really short.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually would have liked this to go a little bit longer. Like, I get
yeah.
why they went this short, because there was a lot on the show. But yeah, I would have liked this to go maybe like 8 minutes. I think I would have enjoyed it even more.
Yeah, and that finish will tell us something where we're going later. Yeah. And these junior tags to open the show have been really great.
Yeah, yeah. No, like I said, like, it wasn't that long ago that like the junior division was All Japan's biggest liability. But I think that's completely flipped on its head now.
Yeah.
Like, it's probably the most underrated junior division in all of Japan.
Oh, definitely. And I think that, don't want to sort of underrate what, like, how good Rising Hayato has been, but I mean, it's really been carried by one man.
Yeah, I mean, it's been carried by Atsuki, but I think like Hayato has really been like stepping up his game. I think Ryu Inoue is coming along well. Kotaro Suzuki is a great addition, and I think Oji Shiba is like a nice like guy to have on the roster as well.
Yep, definitely. And then next up, in special 6-man tag team match, Yoshitatsu, Raisuke Taguchi, and Master Wado defeated Shotaro Ishino, Ryuki Honda, and Masao Hanabata in 7 minutes and 22 seconds with a German suplex hold from Wado on Hanabata. Paul, the first thing I noticed is Master Wado over in Korakuen in front of these All Japan fans.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to be fair, I do think there was a fair percentage of New Japan fans there.
There was a lot of blue in the crowd. Yeah.
No, but I mean, Wado, that's always the thing he's got going for him. I said he has a crowd connection. I think that's really like something he's really kind of built up even more.
Yeah. And I thought this match was actually pretty good for what it was. I don't think Taguchi really dragged it down, and everyone else was solid.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, like, I really can't do without Taguchi, but I think Yoshitatsu actually worked pretty hard, like harder than he normally would in this kind of spot. And Wado obviously like was kind of the standout of the whole match, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. Although it feels like Gun Gear of Anarchy is just in a holding pattern since Ishino's returned.
Yeah.
Which I think, I don't know, hopefully, well, we'll talk about this more later with the tag title scene, but hopefully it's just they're just cooling him off for a while for something later. And then next up, a special 6-man tag match, the very large team of Shuji Ishikawa, Ren Ayabe, and Oscar Lube defeated Tako Omori, Toru Yano, and Black Mensa Ray in 8 minutes and 14 seconds with a running knee from Ishikawa on Omori. Again, perfectly solid match. Better than I expected. I love Mensa Ray just getting dominated by all the tall guys.
Oh God, yeah, no, that was easily the best part of the match. Like just standing, seeing him just stand between the three, like just literally just all three of them just towering above him was amazing. And obviously, I think, well, to be fair, I think the actual highlight of the match was in the pre-match when just Ishikawa, Ayabe, and Loibe just like just stood next to each other. Just how fucking tall they are.
I mean, Mensa Reyes, a comedy spot, brought out a stepladder, but then proceeded to do a large bump off the stepladder that he totally didn't need to do.
Yeah. No, this was a lot more fun than I thought it would be.
Yeah. Next up, special six-man tag match. Voodoo Murder, Suwama, Jun Saito, and Rei Saito defeated the New Japan Lion Team, Young Lion Team of Yuro Nakashima, Ryohei Oiwa, and Kosei Fujita in 9 minutes and 28 seconds with a backdrop suplex from Suwama on Nakashima. I mean, this started off as your typical Voodoo Murders match with brawling and attacking before the bell and everything. But I thought the latter stages of the match where the Young Lions started to get some stuff, it turned into something decent.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's probably the weakest match on the show, I want to say.
But I still like the Young Lions sort of going out there and trying their hardest against the Voodoo Murders.
Yeah. I'm just kind of afraid what this whole Suwama thing beating up the young boys might lead to. I have a feeling that I know where it's going and I'm not a big fan.
Is it the Triple Crown?
Yeah, I think I don't know if he's going to win it, but I feel like he's going to challenge for it at the very least.
Right. Yeah. Well, as long as he doesn't win it, I don't think it's that big of a deal. But we could talk about that later. Next up, in a match that was only announced a couple of days before because for some reason Shingo Takagi was pulled from Battle in the Valley. Shingo Takagi defeated Yuma Anzai in 10 minutes and 31 seconds with a single leg crab hold. But even though this ended like your typical young like rookie match, Anzai got a lot here. He kicked out of like a pumping bomber at like one and everything. It was really good.
I think I'm borderline on like going notebook here. Like I'm very close to giving this 4 stars. I might actually do it if I think of, like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm not a coward. I'm going to do it. I'm going to going 4 stars on this. Like I thought this was awesome. Like I thought Shingo gave Anzai so much. And I actually really liked the finish as well with the single like crab hold where like he tapped him out like a young boy. But he didn't do that until after Anzai like kicked out of the pumping bomber. And you could just see like the annoyance on like Shingo's face when Anzai kicked out of the pumping bomber. And then he's like, you know what? Okay, go fuck yourself. Now I'm just going to tap you out like the young boy that you are. So I thought that finish actually worked really, really well here.
Yes, definitely. And man, I would love to see more Shingo in All Japan.
Yeah, no, definitely. And this is, again, like I keep saying this about Yuma Anzai, but like I can't wait. Like I really hope that Shingo does more All Japan dates because I really want to see these two have a match when Anzai isn't a young boy anymore.
Yep, that would be awesome. And then next up, Yuma Aoyagi and Naoya Nomura defeated Minoru Suzuki and Hokuto Omori in 11 minutes and 14 seconds when Aoyagi used the end game on Omori. And I have to say, given the directions that this company has now gone in, I'm really surprised that they didn't make this a tag title match.
Yeah, that's my takeaway as well, where I'm like, this was a good match, but like literally the entire time it was going on, I'm like, well, are the champions losing here? Because is that the reason why it's not a title match? And then you just win, and I'm like, well, why isn't this just a title match? Like, just put another title match on Corican. Like, it's fine. I think it actually helps the champions if they get another defense under them. Like, it doesn't make any sense that it's not a title match.
Yep, and we'll talk about it later, but I think they could have used a defense. Yeah. But as for the match itself, I actually really liked Suzuki and Nomura's interactions.
Yeah, those were awesome. Like, I liked Nomura selling the leg as well, and then Suzuki just trying to, like, rip his leg apart as well.
Yeah, so for an 11-minute match, I thought this was probably as good as it was going to get.
Yeah, especially because it was non-title as well.
Yeah. And then next up for the PWF World Junior Heavyweight Championship, Miruki Dori defeated Atsuki Aoyagi in 13 minutes and 30 seconds with the muscular bomb. And Atsuki fails on his sixth defense attempt. And Atsuki Aoyagi becomes the 64th PWF World Junior Heavyweight Champion. I'm not sure if I like this quite as much as Atsuki versus Kotaro Suzuki, but it came close. And I think it really established Atsuki as like tough, because Doi had to whip out the muscular bomb, but also, you know, you wanted to give Doi sort of like running roughshod through this, because I think this is going to be a building up to something later.
Mm-hmm. I mean, since we're going to talk about that later as well, but if you want to go with the like established veteran beats the young guy, and the young guy actually like gets elevated in the loss, like this is how you do it.
Yeah.
Like this is exactly how you do it. Like Atsuki actually loses absolutely nothing by losing here. He had a great title reign. And now Doi just comes in and he ends it. And he doesn't just end it with a Bakatari. No, he needs to pull out the muscular bomb, which is his super finisher. Like the fact that he needed to do that, like tells you everything you need to know about like what All Japan sees in Atsuki. Because otherwise they would have been like, yeah, sure, just use a finisher and then you can pin him. But like, I don't know like who was the actual instigating here, like party here. But like the fact that this is what the finish ended up being, like just shows that like Atsuki is someone that like can be protected. And now that he has taken, like that he has lost to the muscular bomb, like that just will just, they will have a rematch for this title. Like I feel like Atsuki is the one that will beat Doi for the title eventually. And yeah. I think that match is going to be even better than this one.
Yeah, and I expect that match to be on either, I would say probably maybe the June Ota Ward. Mm-hmm. That would be a good semi-main event.
Yeah. No. I mean, and like I said, even for like Doi, like even if you wanted to make it a bit longer reign as well, like you could probably like even like main event a Korakuen with him as well. So that you can save like,
that's
a triple crown
for
something else.
That's true too. And then after the match, Rising Hayato came out to make the challenge to Doi, and that will happen on the next tour, and I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
It's going to be a huge opportunity for Hayato.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really big one. Like, it's a main event too, so yeah, that's going to be cool. And then he also announced that he wants to do a tag tournament, or a junior tag tournament as well.
Yes, he said he didn't have a partner, but he'd bring in someone interesting. So I don't know what
that
means.
Bring Yoshino out of retirement.
No, yeah.
That's going to happen. I would lose my mind if that happens, though.
If, I don't know. I mean, I feel like he has to have somewhat of some notoriety if he's going to make this tease. But,
it's Shingo.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think it's Shingo, but... Yeah. I mean, well, okay, there's one person that has teamed regularly with Doi that would be a big deal to bring in as well, but I don't know. It's not like, as far as I know, I don't think he's really doing anything major in Dragon Gate at the moment. So if we see like a reunification of Yama Doi for this tournament, that would be a big deal.
Yeah, that's interesting. And Yamato's doing more outside dates too, right? But
yeah.
He's not the same. But he's not. He didn't go on a freelance contract.
No.
Right?
He's still signed to Dragon Gate. Yeah.
Yeah. And then in the main event for the Triple Crown, Yuji Nagata defeated Kento Miyahara in 23 minutes and 6 seconds with a backdrop hold. Miyahara failed in his fifth defense of the title, and Yuji Nagata becomes the 69th Triple Crown champion.
Nice.
Look, I was a little skeptical of how good this match was going to be. We'll talk about the result later, but this was awesome. I think one of the best matches of the year so far.
I wasn't quite as high. I still prefer the match against Yuma. Like, I thought that one was better, but it still definitely like exceeded my expectations, because last year we were both a bit hesitant to say how good we think this match could be, and I think it definitely like way exceeded that. Like, I think it was an actual, like, genuinely really, really good match. Like, I would probably go, like, 4.25 on this one, so.
I thought Nagata, I thought it started slower than a usual Kento title match. I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just that Nagata was being, like, methodical and working over Kento's arm, which was fine because, A, Nagata can do something like that and make it compelling, and, B, he was pacing himself. But then they just took off and Nagata like turned back the clock at least 10 years.
Yeah. Oh, no, for sure. I think they definitely learned from their last title match. But they realized, okay, there's certain things Nagata can't do anymore. So let's not do those things and let's do the things that Nagata can still do really well. And I think that really showed you. And like, he took some major bumps still as well. Like, he took like apron bumps and everything. I was like, holy shit, what's happening here?
I thought that Kento kickout from the wrist clutch exploder was one of the best kickouts of the year so far.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was almost like, oh okay, this is the finish. Is he actually winning here? And then he didn't. I was like, oh, maybe Kento can actually defend.
Well, see, it's funny because after he kicked out of that wrist clutch exploder, I thought, oh, Kento's going to win now.
Yeah.
But and then it wasn't to be. But this has gotten a lot of eyeballs. I think in part more for All Japan because it's Yuji Nagata. Like I saw people talking about this match that I'd never heard talk about All Japan before. So I think that's sort of good for the company.
It is, but I've also seen a lot of people like both abroad and
there was Japanese Twitter accounts that were not happy with
this result. Exactly. Like I think there's definitely like a risk here, like of like driving away some like long term loyal fans, but if you can somehow keep whatever eyeballs Yuji Nagata is, like if you can somehow bind them to the company long term and those are more than the people that you drive away by doing this, then it is a net positive. It's just we obviously don't know yet what the outcome is going to be.
Yeah, like I was on this is weird because okay, Nagata wins a triple crown, but now they're full tilt into this Noah versus All Japan thing. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack out of that.
Yeah,
that happened.
Like, I really have a feeling that this whole thing of like the rising tide lifts all ships is like the only company that has actually really benefited from that so far directly is All Japan.
And sort of New Japan, you could argue.
Well, yeah, but no one's on New Japan shows. Like, it's New Japan like benefiting from like the fact that they beat everyone. But it's not like outsiders are on New Japan shows, whereas like all Japan now is like just like everybody's playground essentially.
Yeah, Yoshitatsu is their only contracted wrestler that's holding a title right now. Yuma,
yeah,
but all their other titles are held by outsiders or partners or outsiders.
I hadn't actually thought about that,
which sort of makes sense because you're going into a spring and summer and fall with a lot of bigger shows. So I think it's your classic. Okay, well the home team's going to get the titles back over the next few months.
No, hopefully, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
You know what's weird? We have the whole like Elite versus like All Japan show coming up as well, right?
Yeah.
You know what? I as far as I remember, you know what isn't on that show? The Minoru Tanaka title defense, which
yes,
you know he's a Elite wrestler and he holds a title. He holds an All Japan title and it's an All Japan versus Great and. Yeah, it's weird. Like, I just realized that he's not on that show.
Well, the Gayora TV title has never been defended regularly, even in the best of times.
Yeah.
So I sort of expecting that to be on the Ota Ward, maybe. Or something like that. Because they usually will have the Gayora TV title defended at Ota Ward.
Yeah.
So we'll get into more. Oh, and yes, much has been said about, obviously, Nagata being IWGP, GHC, and Triple Crown champion now. The fifth man to do it. And also the only person that's won the Champion Carnival, the G1, and the Global League /N1.
Yep.
But Paul, we also must give some respect because he's the only man to hold all of those titles and the 0-1 Heavyweight Championship, World Heavyweight Championship.
The most important one. And don't forget, exactly. He also held all of the tag titles as well.
He's also held all the tag titles in all of those companies too. That's right.
You know what they actually
and both tag titles in All Japan.
Photo op, like even if he just holds this belt right now, they should just basically just have him a photo op of him just wearing all of the belts he's ever won during his career.
Yeah,
and like all of the trophies in front of him as well. Like I think
did he ever win the WCW TV title? I don't think so.
I don't think so. Like because he was just a jobber in WCW.
Yeah,
he never did anything. Like didn't even put him in. How much do you know that he was a complete job in WCW? Like they never even put him in the NWO. So,
yeah. So that's that show. I don't know where this is going, but we'll talk about. I didn't mean the Triple Crown, but we'll talk about this more in a second. And sorry, I forgot to mention Unagi Sayaka followed Suwama backstage after the match,
yeah.
And then they yelled at each other and like the. post-match interview area. So that's building to something. Also, in the Tokyo Sports story about it, Yoshitatsu's name was brought up. So he might be Unagi's partner in any mixed tag, which is hilarious.
That is a bizarre decision. But yeah, he was in that backstage segment they shot with Unagi and Suwama as well. So I guess so.
Yeah.
And Ishikawa so we'll get challenged to that after the main event.
Yeah, and Ishikawa challenged after the main event. And that'll be the main event of the Ota Awards show on March 21st. But let's get to the Champion Carnival because the blocks and the lineups were announced. Mm-hmm. So A block, Yuma Aoyagi, Jun Saito, Yoshitatsu, Ryuki Honda, Cyrus, T-Hawk, Kento Miyahara, and X. Mm-hmm. And in the B block, Yuma Anzai, Suwama, Rei Saito, Shuji Ishikawa, Shotaro Ishino, Hokuto Omori, Naoya Nomura, and X. Okay, before we get into the X speculation, what do you think of the lineups?
Sort of
to be expected, I guess.
I like them overall. I'm a little bit disappointed that it's... I expected a few more outsiders. Like, it is nice that they can kind of make two blocks basically just off of, like, their own guys now. I think that's a good sign. But I also would have liked if there was, like, two or three more outsiders outside of, like, whoever the X's are going to be.
Well, T-Hawk.
Oh, T-Hawk, yeah. But that's really it. Like, he's the only outsider announced so far.
Poor Takuya Nomura has been shafted, clearly, to make room for Noah guys, I think.
Yeah. Yes, probably.
Right? Yeah. Okay, X's. Mm-hmm. Here's my current... I'm not sure who the second X is, but I think one of the X's is Masa Kitamiya.
That would make a lot of sense, yeah. And I think I know who the second X is.
Who?
It is,
who
in fact, is? The biggest X. Satoshi Kojima.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that tease because Segura said, are you going to go to All Japan? And he's like, I don't know. So it's very possible. I mean, I think those would both be great additions. I mean, I don't think you can go wrong with the X's if they're Noah or Kojima. Any Noah guys or plus Kojima.
Yeah, and I don't think there's really a reason to keep it as an X otherwise because I feel like there's like some storyline stuff with that as well.
Well, I mean, I think it makes even less sense for it to be an X for if it's Kojima, but I guess you still had to go through the whole Kojima announcing he's leaving Noah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's why I feel
which
like
we'll get more into that in a second. Okay, Paul, with this result, my predictions are blown up. I see three scenarios.
Okay.
Or first, Yuma wins the Champion Carnival and beats Nagata. Mm-hmm. Now that Kento has lost the Triple Crown, I don't think you can discount Kento winning and then just winning the Triple Crown back.
Yeah. I think to me that is the most likely outcome here.
Yep. And the third less likely scenario, because it's a New Japan guy with the Triple Crown, is one of the X's wins and beats Nagata.
So Kojima comes in.
But that would only work.
He wins the Champion and then he beats Nagata.
I'm thinking more like a Nakajima or a Kenno. That would be if they were in it. But I'm not sure if it's either of them.
I mean, if you just look at how much Noah has been willing to let, how much New Japan has been willing to let Noah guys beat their guys, I don't know if they would allow that on an All Japan show even.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think you can discount X being Soya either.
Yeah, but that would kind of be, I like Soya, but that would be out of the options, would be like the most disappointing, I would say.
Yeah. I don't think you can discount Nakajima or Kenno, but I'm slightly, little less. I don't know. Last week I thought they would be, but I'm less so now.
I don't know. Like, they teased a lot of stuff after that match at the Dome.
Yeah. So that is the Champion Carnival, and I think it's either Kento or Yuma, and then I would assume Kento faces X in the finals,
right?
Yeah, I
think the B block X is making the final because I don't really. Like, out of the people in the B block, the only one I could reasonably make the final...
Who are you main eventing Ota Ward with? Suwama? Ishino? Nomura?
Nomura, maybe. Otherwise, yeah.
It's
otherwise,
gotta be Kojima.
I don't see anyone
or whoever, the second X.
Would reasonably, like, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Paul. What are the chances that Nagata... Okay, so sorry, my third scenario of the X winning the Champion Carnival, I forgot. I had worked this in my head. Paul, what are the chances that Nagata just drops the Triple Crown to Ishikawa.
And then he's in the Champion Carnival?
Okay. No, but Nagata just, because then like Kenno or Nakajima beats Ishikawa for it.
Why did we do this in the first place?
Because it was a gold watch for Nagata.
And then he just immediately drops it to Ishikawa, and then they go from there. I guess.
I don't think it's. I don't think that's impossible either. To be honest, I'm still going with Kent.
It's unlikely. Like, but to me, Kento is the very clear favorite here because I don't think Yuma is winning the Triple Crown. Like, I think he's winning it this year, but I think he's winning the Royal Road, and then he's winning the Triple Crown off of that.
Yeah, but if you put the thing with Kento winning the Triple Crown again now is like, well, what are the politics of all these big singles matches against Noah guys?
Oh yeah, true. Because then he can't lose
unless they're just offering up Nakajima on a platter to lose.
I mean,
maybe they are. I don't know. Yeah,
you answered your own question.
Okay, let's quickly go over the upcoming All Japan shows. Okay. Apparently, this show is also almost sold out. It's on the 26th at the Nippon Totor Green Dome Meibashi Sub Arena. Main event is the Yuma Anzai Triumphant Local Return Special Six-Man Tag Match. Yuji Nagata, Yutaka Yoshi, and Yuma Anzai versus Suwama, Jun Saito, and Rei Saito. That's a cool main event. It's also got Kento Miyahara and Hokuto Omori. Yuma Aoyagi and Naoya Nomura and Atsuki Aoyagi versus Koji Doi, Kuma Arashi, and Andy Wu. Mm-hmm. And also, Tokyo Dome top star Masada is in the opening match, teaming with the juniors.
going straight from fourth match from the top in the Tokyo Dome to the opening match in another dome. Hey, so he's still in a dome, right?
Yeah. And then on the 27th at Shinkiba First Ring, this is the show that Kitamiya is apparently going to be showing up at. It's got Suwama versus Yuma Aoyagi. Paul, I smell a non-finish.
I smell a Suwama give the backdrop to Yuma Aoyagi and then try to for the Triple Crown.
Where?
Yeah, true. There wouldn't be another one before the Champion Carnival. But they're not even in the same block.
That's the thing. Well, maybe. Oh, I'm sorry, Paul. The May schedule is out, and I thought that the Champion Carnival winner may in fact be challenging at Ode Award in June, but there is a Korakuen in later in May after the Champion Carnival. So I'm wondering, maybe they're saving something really big involving someone not in the Champion Carnival.
I mean, maybe. Or it's Suwama versus Nagata there.
And then Nagata versus the Champion Carnival winner in June?
Because again, he's beat, like, Suwama beat up the young boys. And then he has a singles match with Yuma here, which is weird. Because again, they're not in the same block at all. Unless you run this back as the finals, which I don't think they will. It makes more sense that it's here to like build up Suwama for a title challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. That makes sense. So there's that. That match means something. Oh, because also Suwama got pissed at Yuma Aoyagi after the match at the Dome.
I think that's why it's here as well.
And was yelling him.
Because they announced it like immediately afterwards, I think. Or even during the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we move on into March for the Dream Power series, and this is on March 14th. Couple matches note. Shotaro Shino and Ryuki Honda versus Jun Saito and Rei Saito. Seems like that's a match that they're going to actually finally heat up Gun Gear again with, if you ask me. Shuji Ishikawa versus Hokuto Omori, and then Naruki Doi versus Rising Hayato at Shinjuku Face. So that's sort of a. I feel like them headlining Shinjuku Face with a junior title match is another sort of stamp of approval for the division.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, definitely. I'm just considering if I want to lock up Doi here or if I want to go for the memes later.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to go for the memes later.
I'll say I'm going to lock up Doi here.
I mean, you're two down now and I'm still perfect. So I think I can actually afford to go with a bit of a riskier pick this time.
Okay. And then, so for the Dream Power Series, March 18th, with his All Japan versus Great, we got Taka Omori, Yoshitatsu, Black Mensa Ray, Rising Hayato, and Ryo Inoue versus Kaz Hayashi, Yuizuka, Commander making his All Japan debut, the returning Keiichi Sato, a wayward son of All Japan, and Michiko Miyagi. So it's sort of an intergender tag match.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Yeah.
We got Hokuto Omori versus Jun Tancho, which I think will be a lot of fun. We got Shotaro Ishino and Ryuki Honda versus Takanori Ito and Issei Onitsuka, which I think will be great.
Looking forward to that one.
Naoya Nomura, Hikaru Sato, Dan Tamura versus Minoru Tanaka, Soma Watanabe, and Seichi Aikimoto. Who's the Seichi Aikimoto?
I just thought of something with the Gangnia versus the Ito and Onitsuka. Whose side is Kodama going to be on in that one?
Oh, I don't know. Kodama's not scheduled at all in any of these things.
It is interesting that it's like the two factions that he's currently in are facing off against each other. So I'm wondering if he's at least at like ringside or something.
That's interesting. He
comes
question,
out with both of them.
Do you know anything about Seichi Aikimoto?
No.
I do not either. I'm a little behind on my great watching.
Watching it fairly regularly, but that's not a name that really rings a bell for me right now.
Mm-hmm. It would be cool if like Hikaru Sato beat Tanaka here and we just got a TV title match against those two.
Yeah, I feel like something like that is coming, because otherwise why is Tanaka like here? Yeah.
Yeah. This is a funny match to me. I don't know why. Suwama, Jun Saito, and Rei Saito versus Hayato Tamura, Kazuma Sakamoto, and Chuck Shimitani. It's Voodoo Murders versus Bulk Orchestra.
That's going to be very interesting. It's an interesting combination from Voodoo Murders from Bulk Orchestra, that's for sure.
Yeah. Shimitani is eating
absolutely. Like this, I think an almost 0% chance that Bulk Orchestra is winning here.
And then next up, I think this will be the match of the show. Atsuki Aoyagi versus Kaito Ishida.
Yes, no, that one should be awesome. And also the winner here is also going to be very obvious as well. This is going to be awesome. But this will be Atsuki eating a pin again from a former gold class member.
And then Kento Miyahara, Shuji Ishikawa, Yuma Aoyagi, and Yuma Anzai versus Shima, T-Hawk, Al Lindemann, and then like Tetsuya Izuchi sort of tacked on to the Strong Hearts team.
Yeah, I really like Tetsuya Izuchi. Like, he is very much doing Okada cosplay.
He's good.
But he's doing it pretty well. Like, I think he's someone that like people should keep an eye on, because I think he can really like develop into something. Like, obviously, like, he had that amazing match with Ishida last year, but I think he's still pretty young as well. He has pretty good size as well, so I think if you're someone that watches All Japan but doesn't watch Great, like, I think he's someone that you're probably gonna come away being like interested in afterwards.
Which of these matches does Great win?
Well, they win. Kaito Ishida's winning.
Yep.
Maybe Ito's winning. But that's kind of unlikely.
Onitsuka's eating a fall there.
Hokuto Omori, I doubt, is losing to Jon Tancho as well.
No.
The opener?
Tanaka's team beating, like, pinning, like, Minoru Tanaka pinning Dan or something.
I could see that happening. I can see them win the opener. Like I said, Bulk.
Does Yuma Anzai eat a pin to like a Shima or T-Hawk or even Lindemann?
That I could see potentially happening, because actually I'm kind of struggling who would take the pin on the great side there.
Izuchi
probably, yeah. I mean, the Voodoo Murderers versus Bulk Orchestra could also just end in a no contest as well, because they're just beating each other up with chairs or something like that.
Yep. And then we move on to... So I think that'll be a good show, even if I don't think the matches are necessarily the most biggest you could do, but I mean, it's just Cork and Hall.
Yeah. No, I probably think it's a fun show of all.
Yeah. So 3 days later, we go to Odo Ward General Gym. The only match announced so far is Yuji Nagata versus Yuji Ishikawa. Paul, I think there's a tag title match that's going to be on this show.
You think Gangnia versus Nobuyagi?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
I think it's going to be Nobuyagi versus Kenno and Soya.
Ah, yeah. Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
And so the funny thing is, Kenno and Soya are challenging for the GHC tag titles 3 days before. Paul, are they going to win all the tag titles?
I mean, why not?
Or... I feel like that's a shafting to Kidami and Inaba, but I could also see Kidami and Inaba being transitional champions.
Yeah, because they very much like I think they still they gain something by just winning those titles, especially Inaba.
Yeah.
He's actually doing something, and I think they don't really lose a lot by like just being like the transition over to Kenno and Zoya. Although I could also foresee that like maybe they come in here, they win the All Japan tag titles, or like Nakajima and Kenno come in and like win the All Japan tag titles, and then there's an
All Japan team.
Because Kento has been doing like he like got into it with Kitamiya. So what I could also see happening, like Kento and someone, Yuma, maybe, come into Noah and beat Inaba and Kitamiya for the titles.
Well, I mean, I think if Kenno and Soya win those the GHC tag titles, they're winning the All Japan World tag titles.
Yeah, I could see that happening, but like I said,
Kento
and Kitamiya got into it. Like,
well, I was going to say something, and I'll say this now. I might as well, since we're on the topic. Is it possible, Paul, that like when Kitamiya shows up in All Japan, that him and Kento reconcile, and then they're going to go up against Kongo later?
I mean, yeah, because if there's one because thing Kitamiya hits more than Kento, it's in Kongo.
So, like, because he feels the odd man out. Like, he's obviously got the connections to both Nakajima and Kento, but he's also, you know, had his, you know, feuding with Kongo and Nakajima. So it just feels like, you know, him and Kento are going to bury the hatchet.
And then try and win the titles from Kenno and Soya?
Maybe, or something like that.
That actually would be a really cool idea, yeah. Kind of like that as well.
Yeah. And before we get to the big dome show that everybody is talking about, I have to mention we are at Joshi Pod now. Evolution has finally announced their first show on March 31st at Shin Kiba First Ring. And the matches are, and I will say this, at the press conference, it was just Shuji Ishikawa. I have to commend Suwama for keeping kayfabe and not showing up there as like the heel guy that runs the women's promotion.
Yeah, despite the fact that this was all his idea.
Well, I mean, Shuji's obviously into it, but it was originally Suwama's, yes.
Yeah, and he's still, like, he's obviously not doing it, like, oh, but he's the guy behind the scenes that is running it, so, yeah.
Okay, so we have Sunny versus Miyuki Takase, Zones versus Rina Yamashita, and Chi-Chi versus Yu. I think actually that's a pretty good collection of freelance Joshi talent to put the them all up against each other.
Yeah, I think
so. I cannot complain there.
Like building that, because there's not, it's not like there's like an abundance of talent out there right now in the Joshi scene.
Yeah,
so I think they did a really good job of like picking the people that are out there that are good.
Yeah, and is this show main evented with a mixed tag with Suwama and Unagi Sayaka on opposing sides?
Yeah. But who is teaming with Suwama then?
Ozaki?
Yeah.
Or Yukihi? Maya Yukihi?
Yeah, I think those are the most likely ones. Yeah, and then it's Unagi and Yoshitatsu on the other side.
Yep. Or it could be someone else. I don't know. Would be have to be a heel though. Because it doesn't feel like Voodoo Murders is going anywhere now.
Nope.
Even though I keep thinking it will.
Despite the fact that they turned on each other like six times.
Yeah. And so these are the three out of the original five that have made the training. Although there was a video, and there's actually a new fourth trainee, but they haven't, who's in the video, but they have not released her name yet. So evolution continues apace, and I am sort of looking forward to the show. And yes. I don't know if it's going to be televised or a pay-per-view, but I am going to buy the pay-per-view if I have to. Yes. Basically,
it's like a jumping bomb audio with stealing a shtick.
Yeah. Well, this would be I would not be shocked if the main event is that mixed tag, and then they sneak in like a Rio Inoue and Yuma Anzai in some tag match against some indie guys or something to open the show or something like that.
Yeah. Probably, yeah.
Right?
Like yeah, because like obviously you can't fill out a full card with three people.
Neither does something. No. Yeah. So I think it'll be at least a five-match card, like a young guys, mm-hmm. young men's match, and then the mixed tag main event, and then the three debuts in there. So
after how long this whole thing has taken, like I'm actually really, really interested to see how they look.
Yep.
I mean,
they've been training a while, so. Yeah, and Ishikawa's been training them too.
Yeah. And just looking on what the All Japan Dojo has been like putting out recently, I think they can do that for the women as well. Like I think they have potential to become really good.
Yeah. And so finally we get to Keiji Muto Grand Final Pro Wrestling Last, in quotation marks, love holdout. I bought the pay-per-view, and I don't regret it, actually.
No, same.
At the Tokyo Dome, in front of 30,096 fans. That number is legit.
Yeah.
Okay, people, it's legit. Did you see that crowd?
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, did you, like, also see that when they were, like, when they put up, like videos of like all of the people like streaming into the Tokyo Dome and everything. Like, and
yeah.
Again, they would have turned down the lights if that number wasn't legit.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from Arena Club. .com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy slab packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's gonna be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably gonna get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio, and then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Oh yeah,
and also like there isn't really like this one Noah show where we know they kind of fudged the number, which was the junior sumo hall show, but otherwise like they don't, because like they probably would be reporting a lot more people in Korakuen Hall.
You could fudge, you could fudge those Korakuens. You could fudge those Korakuens to like 900, like 1,050.
Yeah,
if you wanted to, I suppose, if you were really into that. But yeah, I mean, claiming less than 1,500 people in Sumo Hall looks very dire.
Yeah.
So that's probably why they like fudge that number.
Yeah. Whereas this one, no, I think this one is pretty much legit. Like
they stopped selling tickets, I'm pretty sure.
The crowd sounded as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they stopped selling tickets too.
Yeah.
So we go with the starting love. Masa Kidemi and Daiki Inaba defeated Yoshiki Inamura and Yasutaku Yano in 7 minutes and 21 seconds with a Saito suplex from Kidemi against Yano. I mean, this was a very solid opener. Mm-hmm. They didn't reinvent the wheel here, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah. It was a match that happened. The best way I can describe it. There's so much on the show that like by the time it was over, I pretty much just remember the finish, and that's about it.
In the Tokyo Joshi Pro Offer match, TJPW Spark, Yuka Sakazaki, Miyu Yamashita, Shoko Nakajima, and Rika Tatsumi defeated Mizuki, Maki Ito, Miyu Watanabe, and Yuki Arai in 11 minutes and 38 seconds with the Magical Girl and a Savage from Sakazaki on Arai. I actually thought this was really good.
Yeah, I think they started off a bit rough. Like, I think they watched a bit of stuff early on, and like, I think it took them a while to get going, but once they got going, like, it was really good. Like, it was just non-stop action, and just really, like, it was noticeable that they were also all like really motivated and wanted to like go out and show the world what like Tokyo Joshi Pro can do.
Yeah, of course. I thought everyone looked good. I mean, Arai is what she is, the idol project, but I don't think she's terrible by any means. No. She just needs more reps.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a great giant swing, though, that Watanabe did on Nakajima.
Oh, God, yeah. that one was genuinely impressive. Like, on that one, I was like,
but
oh,
yes,
holy shit.
They made the most of their, like, 11 and a half minutes.
Yeah. No, exactly. Like, that's what I mean. Like, once it got going, it was just, like, nonstop. Go, 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 go.
I mean,
spot. And it's exactly what it should be in this kind of, like, where you are, like, this position of the card.
Technically, this was like one of the better matches on the show, too, as we'll get into.
Yeah, I would say so.
Next up, Jake Lee, Jack Morris, and Anthony Green, the good-looking guys, defeated Takashi Sugera, Satoshi Kojima, and Timothy Thatcher of Sugera Gun in 7 minutes and 14 seconds with a skewered front high kick from Lee on Thatcher. This seems to be Jake's sort of newish finisher that he uses in tag matches.
Yeah.
I mean, this didn't last long enough really to be anything other than a match that was there.
Yeah, no, I
but also established
like,
Jake.
Yeah, this was weird. Like, this was weirdly short.
Yeah. I mean, I think they could have done better if they had like another few minutes, but it was just what it was.
Yeah.
I thought Thatcher eating that thing from Lee was interesting because it was a quick match. Thatcher's usually protected.
I think he might be done.
Yeah, we'll see. It would not shock me. I got that. It had that weird feeling to it.
Yeah, like it very much felt like, oh yeah, we're gonna put over like this is like a big show, and it definitely feels like I mean, obviously it's the end of an era, but it feels like we might like there might be some people on. I mean, we know for fact from at least one, but I feel like he's not the only one. People that like we're probably not gonna see a Noah going forward, or we might not see like for much longer either.
Yeah. And this was after the match, and then Kojima said he's done with Noah, and then Sugera teased possibly All Japan. Asked him if that was going. Paul, did you get the feeling that Noah and New Japan are now going to distance themselves from each other a bit after this?
Well, let's talk about that when we get to a later match.
Okay. Next up, New Explosion. Yoshinari Ogawa, Eita, Hayata, Chris Ridgway, and Daga defeated Atsushi Kotoge, Yohei, Seki Yoshioka, Alejandro, and Juta Miyawaki in 6 minutes and 23 seconds with a leg-captured chicken wing combination from Ridgway on Miyawaki. Paul, this was almost even more inexplicable than the previous match in some ways.
Yeah.
Again, way too short for it to be anything, even though it could have been good if it was given time.
Did everyone even tag in? Like, I'm not even sure everyone even made it into the match.
Yeah, I don't even know. This was just building up to the Hayata and Ridgway challenge of the tag titles. But also, Paul, Miyawaki's going back to Mexico. What's up with that?
That's the weirdest outcome out of all of this, that he's just going back to Mexico. They brought him back with like such big fanfare. Gave him a title match, and then he hangs around for like 2 months and then just fucks off back to Mexico.
Now, were they unimpressed with his performance? Because I thought he looked pretty good.
Yeah, I thought he looked really good as well. Like,
did he piss someone off?
I don't know. Maybe it was just like a mid-break of the excursion, and he was always supposed to go back. And maybe they just wanted to make sure he's there for the whole like Muto retirement tour that to like get some eyeballs on him. And then they're sending him back to Mexico to finish off his training there, I guess.
Yeah, it's just she's very strange.
Like the fact that it's also announced like immediately after the match, basically. Like that leads me to believe that like that was always the plan, I suppose. Like they wanted because they have future plans for him. They wanted him on the Dome show, and then we're like, well, fuck it, might as well just give him a little bit of a.
Well, I mean, in the brief time he returned, he got he got two title challenges.
Yeah. Like that's what I believe. I don't know how you could see his performances or what he's done so far and not be impressed with him. So that's why I'm thinking it was always the plan.
Maybe.
Because what else would you want from him, basically?
Yeah. Anyway. Next up, the DDT offer match. Dramatic Dream Future. Mao, Shunma Katsumata, Yuki Ueno and Toi Kojima defeated Tetsuya Endo, Hideki Okatani, Yuya Koroku, and Takeshi Masada in 9 minutes and 6 seconds when Ueno used the WR on Masada. I thought they did pretty good here too. Maybe not quite as good as the Tokyo Joshi match, but I mean, gave the younger guys in DDT some chance to shine.
Yeah, and I will say that this match also had the better Masada in it as well.
Yes, definitely had the better Masada in it. Next up, Dragon Gate versus Noah. Naomichi Marufuji, Hio did Dr. Wagner Jr., and Ninja Mac defeated Shun Skywalker, Kai, and Diamante in 11 minutes and 20 seconds with a moonsault press from Wagner on Kai. Somewhat surprising result, I suppose, but Wagner did get injured on a sort of assisted 450 that he did, and looks like he fucked up his elbow.
No, Diamante, right? Not Wagner.
Diamante, yeah. I'm sorry, Diamante. Which sort of begs the question, was Kai supposed to get pinned here originally?
Might be. But I mean, kind of given what we saw kind of happen later in the show, like, to me it made sense that Noah was winning here.
Yep.
Because I think Noah needed to get wins somewhere on the show. So might as well get it here.
But I enjoyed the match.
To see, like, Diamante versus Wagner. I'm not sure if they've actually... Yeah, no, they've never had a match in Mexico. At least nothing that made cage match. So...
Yeah, and what did you think of the match? I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought the match itself was pretty good. Like, I thought it was nothing special, I would say, overall. But I think, like, everyone kind of worked well. But, yeah, I mean, we don't really know how much longer maybe this match was even supposed to go because of the injury. Like, it could actually be that this match was...
I don't think it was much longer.
No. I don't think it was that much longer, but maybe, like, I'm thinking a bit differently about the match if we actually get, like, a proper finishing sequence, like, whereas this one felt like it was a bit, like, abbreviated as well.
Yeah. Next up, the main event in my heart, All Japan versus Noah. Kenno, Katsuhiko Nakajima, and Manabu Soya defeated Kento Miyahara, Suwama, and Yuma Aoyagi in 15 minutes and 37 seconds with the PFS from Kenno on Aoyagi. Oh God, what could I say about this? I mean, everything from this, Kento's theme blaring through the Tokyo Dome in his entrance. That was awesome. The teasing at the first between Nakajima and Kento was awesome. This match was awesome. I thought Kenno and Yuma worked well, very well together. And I have to give props to Suwama. I thought he played his role perfectly in this. As the guy just comes in and throws lariats and is brawling with Soya and everything.
Yeah, this was awesome.
I mean, I thought this was an incredible match.
Yeah. I went 4.5.
It set up. Yeah. Yeah. Same with me. I mean, it just set up everything.
Yes.
Too, right?
Yeah. I think that's really like the accomplishment of this because we were like suspecting, like, is there going to be more after this? And yes, very obviously, there's going to be a lot more. Like, they set up, like, what, like, 5 different matches here?
Well, they set up Kitamiya coming into Noah.
Yeah.
Or, sorry, All Japan.
Yeah.
They set up Soya and Kenno challenging for the tag titles. They set up Kento versus Nakajima. And it would not shock me if Yuma versus Kenno is also a long-term play.
They also set up Suwama versus Soya because Suwama fucked Soya over the barricade with a judo throw after the match.
Yep. Honestly, I kind of want to see Kenno versus Suwama. I thought they had really good chemistry, the interactions.
Can you imagine the promos Kenno would cut on Suwama?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're old and you're fat.
He already did, like, did you see that in the lead up to it where he did a PFS to an acrylic stand of Suwama?
Yes, I saw that. I saw that, yeah.
No, this was absolutely awesome. This was exactly what I wanted this to be. Like, just 6 guys just absolutely belting the shit out of each other. Like, Nakajima versus Kento was, like, just amazing. Just, like, Nakajima was, like, even more of a shithead than he usually is. Like, he just seemed to be, just, like, extra, like, charisma in this one.
This got pretty good heat from the crowd.
Yeah.
There was a lot of... I saw a few Kento towels. There was Kento chants. Like, you know, this, you know, if... Like, this man could be a big fucking deal if All Japan had, like, promotional muscle behind it.
Yeah. So that's why I feel like that this is actually like this whole like everyone works together is actually like the one that is benefiting the most from it right now is All Japan. Because like the fact that they were on this, that they got a match like this that also like grabbed a lot of people's attention can only help them, even if they lost.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think Kento will have a lot to gain, even maybe more so than All Japan in all of this.
Yeah. Like there is a very funny... scenario that I've constructed in my head that I might want to talk about at a later when we get to another section of the show.
Oh, okay.
That would be very funny.
Final de lucha. Taiji Ishimori and Ghetto defeated Nosawa Ranga and Masada in 4 minutes and 43 seconds with a bloody cross from Ishimori versus Nosawa. I'll say this. This sort of did feel like a Nosawa retirement.
Yeah.
Because he didn't immediately reverse it. And, well, there's nothing to this match. And then, like, Nosawa just offered him up to Ishimori and the bloody cross.
Yeah, that part was... I mean, at least that, like, cut the match short. That was great. At least it wasn't long. So, kudos to Nosawa for, like, trying to stay under the... but trying not to get raided on cage match by staying below 5 minutes.
Yeah. And Keohei Wada refereed this match, interestingly enough.
Seeing him in a Noah shirt is so weird.
Very, very breaks my heart. No, but I just find it interesting that he would appear on the Muto retirement show, given he left All Japan because of Muto.
Yeah. And then the fact
returned,
that people
and he returned,
better connections,
yeah. And he returned to All Japan on the last show Muto was on before Wrestle 1, which was funny. So yeah, I mean, it was an angle, and it was just Nosawa getting his moment.
Yeah, yeah. There was nothing to this match at all.
No. Tokyo Tornado. Hiromu Takahashi defeated Amasaka in 11 minutes and 2 seconds with a time bomb 2. There was some melodrama here with the mask. I mean, this was a pretty good match. I don't know. I just don't think it hit as high as it could have between these two. In part because they only got 11 minutes. In part because they decided to do the melodrama.
Yeah. Like, it just completely took me out of it. Like, that was like WWE level, like, drama bullshit. Like, oh, it's your mask. It's your mask, Amasaka. Like, give a shit.
I mean, although, like, after watching what they did in this match... absolutely, positively could have a match of the year level candidate if they actually had like a 15-20 minute singles match with no BS.
Oh, yeah. No, if they don't do the whole like Roman talking spots or whatever and actually just get like 20 minutes, just go out there and just like do their thing, I think, yeah, then it could have a match of the year contender. But yeah, this kind of left me cold a bit as well. Like, I was disappointed afterwards.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at the result though at all.
No.
Oh, what could we say of this next match? Shining through, Kazuchika Okada defeated Kaito Kiyomiya in 16 minutes and 32 seconds with a Rainmaker.
Five stars.
Well, okay. In a vacuum, it was
dog
an awesome...
dogshit booking, amazing match.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was an incredible match. The booking was dog shit. I'm not sure. Please explain. I mean, I know some people are saying, Kaito, okay, like, this is a story. But we went through this with Muto, and he had to... claw his way up there. I don't know where this is going, and I'm not convinced Okada will put him over. Like, what is the point of this?
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, clearly he has to, like, do... clearly has to do now, has to do, like, Okada cosplay and, like, adopt the Rainmaker or, like, a modified Rainmaker or whatever the fuck, and then he's gonna beat him in, like, 5 years or something. I don't fucking know. No, like, the booking of this was absolute... Like, okay, here's the thing. The fact that I think this is dogshit booking really just comes down to one spot. Because until that happened, I actually thought, you know what? Even if Kaito loses this, he actually comes out better for it just based on how the match structure has been up until this point. And then Okada pulls him up from the pin. And I'm like, well,
okay, yeah,
Kaito
that
can't
is...
lose now, and then he immediately eats an Emerald Explosion and a Rainmaker and loses. Really defending the memory of Mitsuharu Misawa here.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just made no... Oh, and also, the whole fact is that you had your champion lose to New Japan champion. If Kaito wasn't the champion, it would be less egregious, I think.
Yeah.
Still not good.
I mean, like I said, but at this point, like, a lot of this to me is on Kaito too, because you're the champion. Like, this is your second title reign. You're not a rookie anymore. You should know the way this goes. And like, you know how all of the build up has been. And okay, New Japan has a lot of leverage, and so they can like basically strong arm their way into winning this match.
Yes.
But at very least, they do not have enough sway to say no, no, no. Not only do we get to win this, we also get to pull up your champion from a pin and then beat him decisively.
Yeah,
like, you can push back against that.
Of course. I mean, if they wanted to, they probably could have gotten it. They could have gotten a. I think Noah probably could have gotten a 20-minute match where it was a little more evenly matched if they wanted to.
That was the most hilarious part of the entire thing, though, is Kaito being like, I want this match to have no time limit, and he loses in 16 minutes.
Paul, did you know this was Okada's shortest singles match since defeating Bad Dude Tito in London last autumn?
Yeah. So it's slightly better than Bad Dude Tito.
Yeah.
Okay, no, but I also briefly just want, like, the book, like I said, the booking was dog shit, but I also just briefly want to talk about the match itself as well.
Okay.
Because I wasn't joking when I said 5 stars. Like, I genuinely think this is a 5-star match.
I mean, it was an incredible match. I'm not going to... Yes. I can't take it away from it, but, I mean, it did draw... I hate the lift up the opponent before the 3 count in general, no matter who does it, though.
Yeah. No, but, like, to me, like Kazuchika Okada, like, to me, he is the greatest wrestler of all time. So, and this might be my favorite performance of his. Like, this complete just shithead like persona he had in this match just worked amazingly. Like, I really hope that this is something that he keeps doing going forward as well. Like, I hope that whenever like New Japan has like the next guy ready to become the ace, they just do the Jumbo and Misawa storyline with Okada in the Jumbo role. Because I think he would be absolutely amazing at doing that. And so, like, I thought that worked really well. And I also thought, like, Kaito did really good in the match as well. And why I'm saying, like, up until he gets pulled up from the pin, I actually thought that he got elevated here. Because the way that this was built up was obviously, like, Okada is not taking Kaito seriously at all. Like, he just punks him out. But then, like, they had a lot of spots in here where basically Okada just got, like, basically like, yeah, I take care of this piece of shit. And then, like, Kaito is just like, no, 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 no. And Kaito just, like, basically, like, exceeds. Like Okada is underestimating Kaito at every point. And, like, Kaito is just like, no, you motherfucker, if you don't take me seriously, I'm going to beat you. And then they kind of undo all of that in one spot. So, like I said, dog shit booking, but the match itself to me is absolutely amazing. It's my favorite match. Like, it's probably going to be my match of the year.
Oh, wow.
So I don't have another 5-star match so far this year. So unless I get another 5-star match this year, like it is going to be my match of the year.
Yeah, I mean that's up there. Yeah, I mean I don't know. I just I'm trying to think of another match where it was dog shit booking, but it was incredible, and I can't think of it that I thought was incredible, but I can't think of anything off the top of my head. So
no, and I think to me that probably is also influenced again by the fact that Okada is my favorite wrestler. So I very much have, like, the two halves, which is, like, one half of me is, like, the analyst side that is, like, well, this is absolute horrendous booking, whereas the other side of me is just being a massive Okada mark and being, like, yeah, you beat that geek into the ground.
Oh, I'm sure, like, any Okada dyed-in-the-wool New Japan fan was just, like, creaming their pants, basically, at this.
To me, the fact that he also, like, as an Okada fan, that he hit, like, the fucking champion of Noah with a spinning emerald explosion right before the finish is just an absolute fucking cherry on top. It's so funny. But it's, like, the worst. Like, why would Noah agree to this? So fucking stupid.
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, just the way it was booked. I understand that you can't get out of Kaito losing, but this was beyond what I thought would happen. Anyway, awesome match. And then Masahiro Chono comes out.
That was the main event, and we're done with this show now.
And then Masahiro Chono comes out to a huge response. I should add, early on in the show, like, Kojima got the biggest pop up to that point in the show, which I think sort of tells you about the crowd.
Yeah, I mean, but that was to be expected.
I mean, there were, like I said, there were people with Kento towels and stuff like that, but the old timers really did get the biggest pops.
I thought it is kind of a credit to, like, both the, like, Kongo versus All Japan match and, like, this, like, the Kaito versus Okada, that, like, they managed to get, like, a lot of, like, they definitely obviously had, like, their fans were there as well, but they got pretty much the entire crowd invested in their match, and there were a lot of people in there that didn't care about any of them before the match.
I would say that those matches got the most heat of, like, the non-old guys. And then so Chono comes out, big applause. He goes to commentary. And then so Pro Wrestling Last Love, Tetsuya Naito defeated Keiji Muto in 28 minutes and 58 seconds with a Destino. I mean, if you visualized in this head what you think this would be, it was. I mean, obviously, like, whatever. It didn't felt like it dragged on too long, but it was still Muto on the ground for a lot in some spots and some sort of tribute spots, Muto teasing the moonsault. I mean, I don't think it was horrible, but I'm just glad it's over, I guess.
Yes.
But I thought Naito worked hard. I thought Naito worked hard to try to make something of it, at least.
I don't know. Like, my thing with Naito is, I think Naito is, like, a great wrestler, and he's been in some of my all-time favorite matches. But there's also times when I just bounce off of him really, really hard.
Oh, sure, I agree. I think he's of, like, the sort of New Japan top guys. I think he's the least consistent if you put, like, out of Okada and Tanahashi and him.
Yeah, because, like, to me, like, I really, like, this match kind of did nothing for me. And I, like, Naito's performance was fine, but, like, I also don't think it was anything super remarkable. Like, I'm actually more remembering stuff Muto did in the match than really stuff Naito did in the match.
Yeah.
Like, I definitely always remember Muto, like, going for the moonsault. And, you know what, like, I guess why he didn't do it, but, like, dude, it's not like you've ever given a shit about your body beforehand.
Yeah.
Why you start in your last ever match, just do the moonsault, even if it just, you know, destroys your body.
Well, because maybe his hips aren't even strong enough for him to actually do it now.
Or to actually even, like, push himself off.
Yeah. I think that's what it is.
Yeah. Like, it's because more... they very clearly build it, or they built a whole match around it, and then he just never did it.
Well, I think it's probably more, like, he's injured his hips since the last time he did it, which was at Cyber Fight Festival 2021. So, you know, I think he probably just can't do it now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised his hips are injured just based on the way he does leg presses.
Yeah. Yes. He tweeted out, it's leg day. Because now he just tweeted out, like, him training his legs, training for that WWE match that he hasn't
training
had yet.
Training his legs.
Yeah. God, I don't know. And he said in the tweet, like, who knows what's next? Or something like that, right? But I would assume he's just going to do, like, the variety show circuit, the talk show circuit, right? Like Choshu and Kensuke and Akira Hokuto do.
Yeah. He's going to be, like, on, like, loads of, like, guest commentary spots in, like, every promotion as well.
Yeah, for sure. And then Muto gives a speech and he calls Masahiro Chono into the ring for an actual retirement match because Chono never had one. And then he gets Tiger Hattori in there to be the ref. And that goes 1 minute and 37 seconds. And then Chono makes him tap out. Chono has to do a running, like, shining Yakuza kick because he probably can't get his legs up to do an actual one.
Nope.
And then put him in the STF. For the tap out. I mean, I appreciate it, and I think the crowd loved it, but it does make it getting one over Naito for sure.
Yes, absolutely. Like, this motherfucker. He's such a worker. He's just like, oh, yeah, no, sure. I agree to lose to Tetsuya Naito. I can lose to Tetsuya Naito, but it's not going to be my retirement match, and it's not going to be the main event on the show. No, I'm losing to my buddy over here, Chono. Now, with that said, I actually did kind of love the fact that they did this whole thing. Like, I thought that was, like, that felt like a genuine, like, feel-good moment. To, like, see them, like, the two, like, still living, like, three musketeers in there. And, yeah, also the fact that Chono never got that retirement match, that he actually, like, formally now has one, and it is against, like, a guy that was his generational rival.
Yeah.
Is actually a nice thing. Like, it is, like, puts actually a nice bow on both of their careers, I feel.
And then after the match, like, when Muto is on his way out, like, they do the nice thing on the graphic on, like, the Tron. It's like Muto and Hashimoto and Misawa sort of tribute thing. And, like, you know, there's, like, Hashimoto tribute spots on the show, too.
Yeah.
No.
That was overall, like, a really nice ending to the show.
Oh, and Muto's entrance was incredible, too, actually.
Yes.
With all the different Muto themes, and then he came out on the Cody Vader.
I was afraid they were gonna have gonna require him to walk downstairs as well. And I was like, oh, I don't know if he can do that.
Yeah, but he came out, got on the elevator, and the elevator even went up and sort of lifted him up, and then brought him back down, and then he walked down the ramp.
Thank God. Yeah. No, yeah. But I think in terms of production values, this entire show, which is like absolute next level.
Oh yeah, absolutely, even bigger than New Japan.
I mean, I would say Noah has like the best production values like on the entire planet, I want to say, in terms of like wrestling promotions.
Yeah.
Because I think they blow like AEW out of the water and like WWE.
Yeah.
Well, like,
yep. And so this apparently did 100,000 buys on pay-per-view. That's worldwide, I assume.
Insane, yeah.
And I just saw the story. But apparently CyberFight is very happy with this and everything like that. And they made a lot of money. And so I don't know, Paul, like, is this going to be continued? Are they going to lean on the old men?
But who is there that they could bring in that would do the same?
Yeah.
There isn't one. That's the thing. Like, there's no, like, Keiji Muto was like a generational like guy. Like, he was like a big crossover, like, media star as well.
Yeah.
And there isn't anyone else.
Yeah.
After him, that is on the same level.
Now the question is, though, are we headed back into pay-per-views for Japanese companies?
I hope not.
I hope not.
I have a feeling we're probably going. Like, I don't think this is going to be the last one. I could actually see that they will try to do the same thing with CyberFight Festival, and then I think it depends how CyberFight Festival does.
Yeah, well, because Stardom is now like a pay-per-view company.
But they never had like a live stream, like they never had like the same live streaming thing New Japan or Noah had.
But I mean, I think really only New Japan and Noah could get away with pay-per-views for big shows.
Yeah, I don't think All Japan even has the infrastructure to like. Set up
they probably could. They probably could if they wanted to. But I mean, but you're just not going to get the buys. You're better off trying to just get as many people as you can to pay your 900 yen.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like I said, like I don't think you can get away with that for like a lot of shows either. Like for example, for like New Japan, like you could get away with that. Like I don't know, Dominion and Wrestle Kingdom, I think at the most.
Yeah.
And then same for Noah. It's like. CyberFight Festival and the New Year show, I suppose.
Yep. Did we mention Jake Lee confronting Kaito after the match?
Well, I mean, we're previewing that, right? We're previewing that later.
It's just so funny that when, like, it's Jake taking advantage of Kaito, who's, like, trying to pull himself up onto the chair and everything like that.
Like, oh, hey, you just lost to Kazuchika Okada. How about Jake Lee? Like, oh,
cool. As Michael Cole would say about Seth Rollins, the ultimate opportunist.
Yeah. I would be more like Todd Grisham. It's Jake Lee.
Yeah. So let's get into that now. I mean, I still think this is the best show I saw all year just for the whole spectacle of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For the whole, like... I've definitely seen, like, I think Wrestle Kingdom was better in terms of, like, overall match quality.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, just top to bottom match quality. Like I said, I had, like, my match of the year on here and the All Japan Noah stuff. But, like, otherwise, I think, like, Wrestle Kingdom was better. But, like, just in terms of, like, spectacle and everything, like, I think I would definitely put this on the list as well for, like, potential show of the year. Which, to be fair, is, like, the second one already this year from Noah, because I would definitely consider the Noah the New Year for that as well.
Absolutely. And then, so we move on to the upcoming
the
Noah
post-Mudo
shows.
The post-Mudo era, finally.
The post-Mudo era, yeah. So, Star Navigation.
About them again. Until we'll retrospective.
Yeah. Star Navigation 2023 at Corken Hall on March 9th. I'm not going to go through every match. I'll just say ones that are worth checking out. Eita versus Hayata.
Mm-hmm.
Yoshinari Ogawa versus Chris Ridgeway, though.
I'm really interested in that one. Like, Eita vs. Hayata could be really bad.
Yeah.
But Ogawa vs. Ridgeway, I think, like, if they keep it relatively clean, that could be really awesome.
Kaito Kiyomiya and Atsushi Kotoge versus Jake Lee and Anthony Green.
Mm-hmm.
That could be decent. And then for the GHC Junior Heavyweight title, Amasuka versus Hiroki, which is, you know, it'll be good.
Yeah.
I'm not, like, you know, dying for that one.
And that is definitely one I wouldn't ever lock up, because to me that doesn't pass the mirror test, because I don't think Hiroki has any chance of winning.
Yeah. March 14th, Yokohama Radiant Hall, Sunny Voyage. Masa Kitamiya versus Manabu Soya. That's an interesting match given everything going on. Daiki Inaba versus Kenno. Yoshinari it's the bill for the tag title match. Yoshinari Ogawa versus Hayata. Eita versus Chris Ridgway. And Kaito Kiyomiya and Yohei versus Jake Lee and Anthony Green. And then we get to Noah Voyage 2023 in Yokohama at the Yokohama Budokan, which I believe holds 4,000 people. Roughly.
Yeah, I don't know.
Theoretically. Yeah. GHC Junior Heavyweight Tag Team title. Yoshinari Ogawa and Eita versus Hayata and Chris Ridgway. Again, it's a Hayata factor and how much overblown booking they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. Like it's the whole Stinger thing. Like, in theory, that could be a really good match, but I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of bullshit there.
GHC Tag Team Championship. Masa Kitami and Deki Inaba versus Kenno and Manabu Soya. We basically already talked about this match.
Yeah.
But I'm really leaning towards Kenno and Soya.
Yeah, I could really see that happening as well. Unless, like I said, they might want to do like Kento and someone challenging for the GHC tag titles as well. But otherwise, yeah, I think if Kenno and Soya are coming into All Japan, I think it makes a lot of sense for them to come in as champions.
Well, it's because three days later, they're probably, or 2 days later, or whatever it is, they're probably challenging at Nomuyagi at Ota Ward.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good semi-main event at Ota Ward. Because I think Kento will also be involved in someone against. Maybe Kento faces Kitamiya at Ota Ward or something.
Well, maybe Kento is doing something else as well, but let's wait a second for that.
And then GHC Heavyweight Championship, Kaito Kiyomiya versus Jake Lee. This is a very interesting match because it's go time for both these guys. Jake's got to have a good match. Kaito's got to draw. And Jake sort of got to draw too, right? Like, if this is sub 2000, I would consider that a disappointment.
And it's time in for attendance. My lock of the week.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm locking up Jake.
Are you really?
Yes, I am.
Oh my God.
Let's go.
Seriously.
Yes. I think because I think this is kind of the end of kind of Peacock Kaito. Like, I think we're going to go for like yet another Kaito transformation, but I think it's also necessary after this loss. So I think now is also the time to just like take the belt off of him to like that really kind of hammer that in and then rebuild him yet again.
But it's
but maybe so this stupid. Time it will stick.
No, I want to say Kaito's permanently damaged goods, but I don't want to because I think he's one of the best wrestlers in the world. But I could be convinced that he is completely damaged goods. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that he's just too much of a doormat to be an ace.
Yeah. Not all of his fault.
No, but again, like, there's a minimum at least to how much you should.
I mean,
like, I don't think you need to be, like, a complete, like egomaniac. But, like, there's definitely a difference between being a team player and being a doormat. Like, Kaito needs to learn how to say no. Because at some point, you need to think about, like, what is actually beneficial here. And Kaito just doesn't ever do that.
No, but like, okay, in a Japanese promotion, how much weight can a 26-year-old guy really throw around backstage?
He's a 2-time champion already.
Yeah, I know, but still, I feel like, I think there's like a bit of like ageism going there, whereas like, given what he's accomplished, he's still not taken seriously in the back by some people. That's just my speculation, but it feels like that.
It is, but like, for example, we can, for example, compare him to Okada.
Yeah,
because Okada at the same age was also in his second reign. Like that was long one. Like that was the not the really really long one, but that was the 391 day one. You know?
Yeah.
Where he beat a shitload of people, and you're telling me that Okada at that same stage of his career, like pretty much exactly 10 years ago, would have accepted the same stuff that Kaito is accepting.
Perhaps, but he also
would he not have at least have enough weight already to at least soften some of it?
Okay, he should have enough weight already to at least soften some of it. He should be able to be like, I'm going to go 25 minutes with Okada and he's going to pin me after we both get near falls on each other.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you definitely don't accept the whole getting pulled up. You don't accept the whole, like, having the second shortest singles match of Okada's career, more or less. Like, minus Young Boy stage.
Yeah. Well, one of the only other matches that I know that Okada ever had that went shorter was he lost that one against Jay White in the Tokyo Dome.
Oh yeah, excuse me. Oh, that one was another great match, though.
That was a great match. I was like, one of Jay White's best matches.
Yeah, because that started the whole like that like put the whole like Blade Runner over so much when he just caught Okada and just beat him.
Yeah, but, and it was all business, no filler from Jay White either.
Yeah. But like I said, like look at that second title reign that Okada had, like around the same age, like, you know, he got like eight defenses. Like he beat Tanahashi for it, and then he lost it to AJ Styles, like nearly a year, like over a year later. And then just compare that to like Kaito's second title reign.
Well, I mean, this goes back into stuff that just how you make Kaito. They should have just followed the Okada formula. That's how you make a star. Now, mind you, they didn't have anyone as prestigious as Tanahashi to do it. Mm-hmm. But he needed to just win, and not roll up Fujita.
Yeah.
Or whatever bullshit. He should have beaten Muto in the second chance, absolute max, right? They should have never been dragged out as long as it was.
No. And again, like Okada in a second reign, right? Bodymaker Coliseum, now known as the Edeon Arena.
Yeah.
Dominion, 22nd of June 2013. He faces Togi Makabe. Like, not no one, but also, you know, not someone I would say is like was ever like an amazing draw either.
No.
Like 7,000 people.
Yeah.
And Kaito like loses 900 compared to the last time he main evented the same arena.
Yeah.
Like, within 6 months. Less than 6 months.
Yeah. I mean, if this number is a disaster and Kaito wins, do they take him off? Do they take it off him the next match? Next.
They might.
Defense?
They might.
Like, what's your gut for the...
You kind of have to, but who do you put it on? You know? Well, like...
Oh, God.
Is Go ready to come back at that point?
He might be. I don't know. But yeah, if Go comes back, he might have to do that.
Yeah. But I think Jake is winning here so that, like, we can... Really? Do, like, the whole rebuild title reign again. Yeah.
Now is Jake
Trans- and then you know what I said? You know what would be the funniest outcome if Jake Lee wins the GHC title one? Title?
What?
Kento comes in and he beats Jake.
That would be hilarious.
That would be so funny. It's just Jake is like, fuck all of you guys. I'm out of all Japan. Finally, I can be my own man. And then Kento just comes after him. Just beats him for the belt in Noah.
Yeah. But this... I am just so curious on what this card is going to do drawing wise.
Yeah, I think that will be a big indicator of like what Noah numbers are going to be going forward.
I mean, anything less than 2,000 is disappointing because, like, you know, if you sell Cork and Hall out, that's 1,800 people, right?
Yeah.
So you want to do more than a Cork and Hall max capacity?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, for sure.
I think 2,200 would be respectable. Yep. But I think anything less than 2,000 is not great.
Yeah, anything less than 2,000 to me, like that's a disaster. So
anything less than 1,500 is an absolute disaster, I think.
The Yokohama Budokan. Let's take a look what we've had in there recently. So far this year, there's only been one show, which was Stardom, which did 1,600.
Yeah.
And then let's just go like pre-pandemic, because I don't want to look at pandemic numbers because they're going to be weirdly skewed.
No, didn't it open like during the pandemic?
Oh yeah, right, it wasn't even open yet.
Because it opened, it replaced Yokohama Bunka Gym.
Yeah, true. Okay, so we're not going to have really like... Yeah.
But
they did 940 for the N1 in there. So that was already when like restrictions were lifted.
Mm-hmm.
And New Japan did 1,400 with an absolute nothing card in there.
Yeah, that's New Japan. Yeah, so... it'll be very interesting to see.
I mean, the biggest one I think so far in that building is Big Japan with like the Big Japan Welcome Back show with 1,800. But they basically gave away tickets for free for that one.
Yeah, but I think the capacity is 4,000 roughly, maybe a little less. But you know, I think to me 2,000 is going to be like the number you want to get.
Yeah, if
Kaito is any kind of draw.
Yes, exactly. That's the thing. Like, you want to find out, is Kaito the guy that we can rely on now that we've lost Muto? Here it is. So Yokohama Budokan is an arena facility equipped with a full-scale martial arts hall, which seats 500, an arena which seats 3,000.
3,000, okay.
Yeah. So 3,000 is the max capacity in there.
Okay.
3,000.
Yeah, but I still think that 2,000 is your ideal minimum.
Yeah.
If there's any juice.
Because again, Noah wants to be the promotion that challenges like New Japan's dominance.
Yeah, and also we got to talk about
expectations for the numbers.
Well, we also got to talk about Jake here because like Jake's got his fans. There's always been Jake fans at these Noah shows. Like, what can he help do? You know.
I mean,
I think that'll be telling.
Kind of hard to say. Generally when he's been on top in All Japan, the numbers have been pretty decent. But it was never like a blowaway draw either, so it's hard to say.
Well, he had some not so great numbers as Triple Crown champ, even within pandemic parameters. But we can debate those, how accurate those were. But he's got a fan base, nevertheless, and so. You know, I think some of this will be on him, too. Anyway, Paul, do you have any closing thoughts on all of this? Because there's a lot happening right now.
Like I said, we've now entered a fully new era of Noah. What I'm actually going to be interested in is actually what Noah's roster is going to look like going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we're going to see some changes on that one. Pretty soon. Like, I think there's some people that we've seen as regulars that are kind of either going to slowly fade away or like will just like not appear at all anymore going forward as well. Like, I'm really interested if like someone like Hideki Suzuki would stick around, because I think he actually has a lot of like to still add and to like show to people as well, just based on the way he's been acting on this Noah run. But I feel like someone like Fujita, I think, is gone.
Yep. The old, like, Funaki. Funaki wasn't even booked on the show, which is interesting because he's a Muto friend.
And he's in Congo.
Yeah. He's not on any of these shows, I don't think. So, yeah, hopefully. But it's like, well, did they do the job they should have getting the young talent ready to pick up the torch after Muto was gone? And I can't say they have.
Well, at least Funaki put over Wagner, which...
That's something. Honestly, yeah, Wagner's been great, so...
Yeah.
So that's that. And then
I'm excited about... make fun of that in the moment, but that actually turned out to be a good decision.
It did. And of course, Noah in All Japan could be... I mean, Noah in All Japan's not going to do, like, fill up Budokan business, but it could definitely help both companies a lot, especially All Japan.
All Japan, like I said, they could still get really badly fucked over in this whole deal, but I think right now they're the promotion that's benefiting the most from these kind of talent exchanges.
Absolutely. I think Kento is sort of proving that for sure. All right. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time, I guess maybe if whenever there's enough to talk about, because it seems like with the exception of a couple All Japan shows coming up, all the companies are taking a bit of a break, at least for All Japan and Noah. So we'll be back when there's some stuff to talk about, hopefully in a couple of weeks. So for Paul Vosh, I'm Gerard DiTrollio, and take care.
Music, it's not just part of our daily lives. It's part of our wrestling fandom as well, and it has been for decades. That's where this show comes in. Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling, hosted by Andrew Rich. Hey, that's me. Each episode delivers a different topic with a variety of great guests, fun conversations, musical analysis, and of course, a heartfelt pun or two. New episodes drop every other Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Check out Music of the Mat only on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.